The Virginia Voice presents What's Your Story? Our program is based on the idea that everybody has a story to tell. All you have to do is ask. Now, here's the host of What's Your Story, Don Dale.
Hello, and welcome once again to What's Your Story? My guest today is Maurice Duke, who has worked for Richmond newspapers. He was there from 1958 to 1963. And he went to graduate school and then became an English professor at VCU, where he stayed for 33 years. He's retired now. We're recording this interview at the Dogwood Tower at Imperial Plaza. And there have been lots of interesting stops that are not summarized in that capsule description of Maurice Duke, and we'll get to those. But we start with the program with a question that almost always prompts a conversation. What's your earliest childhood memory?
Probably it's that great snow of 1940. My family was living in Powhatan County at the time, and I remember the snow drifts being above my head. It was an eerie feeling for a little kid. And that's probably my first memory.
Do you know how old you were?
Six years old.
So they were over a six-year-old's head.
Yes, yes.
That was an amazing snow. I've never seen one like
yes,
that.
Yes, I remember the, it was a farm, of course, and I remember the snow drifts whipped around the corner of the barn all the way up to the eaves of the barn, which made it in the middle of the drifts at the corners there, made them, I guess, 10 feet tall or so. But the regular, just the actual snowfall as it came down was over my head, and I was 6 years old.
What did you all do? Just stay inside?
Well, that's right. We had no electricity and no running water, and it was pretty gothic, really. And we stayed in, couldn't get out to drive to get to the store or anything. And so we just weathered it out until the snows melted sufficiently that we could drive out.
And this all happened in Powhatan, but you have gone to school in many, many places because of your father's business.
That's right. My father was in construction work, defense construction work during World War II. And we lived in many places between New York and Tennessee in the 1940s.
But you went to high school eventually in Central Virginia?
Yes, I went to several high schools. Well, I went to over ten schools when I was coming up, but the high schools that I went to here in Richmond, or the schools, I should say, is St. Paul's Cathedral, and I went to VCU after I got out of the Navy, and then I also briefly went to St. Patrick's and to Binford Junior High School.
Mm-hmm. And you dropped out of high school at one point.
I dropped out of high school, yes.
Why?
Because I hated it. I was one of those kids that just did not cotton to academic work in high school. And I dropped out and took a job in an auto shop rebuilding carburetors and fuel pumps for automobiles. And as it would happen, I met a young woman, who was still in high school and began to date her, and as a result, I went back and finished Cathedral High School and went straight in the Navy then.
What was the Navy like in those days? What, it was post-war.
That's right.
Still the 50s, right?
It was 54.
What was it like? Did you have an interesting assignment?
I had a fantastic assignment. I'm probably the most fortunate enlisted man who was ever in the Navy.
Huh.
I was, for a time, a flight deck photographer or aircraft carrier, and then I was transferred to an organization called Combat Camera Group. And as a result of that, I had some fascinating jobs in Asia and Southeast Asia. I went through the Arctic on an icebreaker. I covered the atomic bomb testing in Yucca Flats in Nevada, yes.
Wow.
Covered the CETO conference in Manila in 1957. Covered a flood in Sri Lanka. That's some of the things right there.
Tell me about Yucca Flats. How long did you spend there?
Well, it was about a month, I suppose, something like that. The most memorable thing out of the Yucca Flats was I saw three of those in photograph, three of those atomic tests, and they were above ground tests, which is more exciting. I remember that we were up on the rim of a canyon, 3-4 o'clock in the morning, waiting for the blast. And when the blast came, it went from total darkness to middle of daylight, as far as you could see. All 360 degrees around the horizon. And then as the blast itself began to wane, the light began to come back into the site of the explosion, and you were suddenly left in darkness again. It was awesome. It really was.
How far away were you from ground zero?
I don't know exactly how far we were. The blasts were down in the canyon floor, and we were up on the canyon. So I don't know what it was. It was we were close enough that on one of the blasts, we had a tremendously strong shock wave that knocked a couple of our photographers off the top of a bus. And they were running cameras, as I was too.
Were you shooting still pictures?
I was shooting movies at that time.
Where did the interest in photography come in?
The interest in photography came when I went back to high school. I met a young fellow who was shooting pictures for Cathedral High School, and we became friends, and I went to his place. He had a dark room at home in his basement, and it fascinated me the way they were developed and printed and so on. And at that time, I bought a modest camera, and within a year's time, I bought a sophisticated camera, Speed Graphic. All the press photographers.
Big thing.
Big thing, cut film and so forth, and made a darkroom in my parents' basement, and actually it was a cellar rather than a basement, and started shooting, and that's how the whole thing got going.
And this has been a thread throughout your life. You've shot pictures.
I've been a professional photographer or amateur photographer since that time, and it was about 1952 or something like that.
So more than half a century.
Yeah, that's right, and I'm still shooting.
And still shooting.
Yeah.
What are you shooting these days?
I've been shooting for Central Virginia Historic Organizations. For example, I have there's a show operating at the in Glen Allen right now that I did all the photographic work for. And they just opened last week, centering on General Jeb Stuart, Civil War general. Mm-hmm. And that kind of thing I shot for a year or so for ACORN, the Alliance to Conserve Old Richmond Neighborhoods, and because I'm interested in history, and had the opportunity to go to lots of historic sites here in Central Virginia, actually mostly in Richmond.
I didn't mean to leave the Navy behind, because that's fascinating. I've never met anyone who was at Yucca Flats during the atomic test before.
I was there.
What other highlights were there to your career?
Well,
in the Navy, I mean.
In the Navy. Well, let's see. I went to Yucca Flats. I went through the Arctic on an icebreaker back in the 50s.
All the way through the Arctic? Or what does that mean?
Well, I flew from San Diego up to Seattle and took an icebreaker through the Bering Sea and across the tip of Alaska, about 1,500 miles or so. We had a system, the U.S. government had a system called the Dew Line.
Right.
Which was just an early warning. And in the summertime, Navy ships would go up to replenish the Dew Line, and I went with that group.
The distant early warning system, I remember that from the 50s.
Right,
when
that's
I was
right.
A child.
Yeah.
And did the Navy, as the Air Force did for me, make a profound change in your life? Did you come out of it with a different view of yourself and what you wanted to do?
I'd say the change was stunning, monumental.
Yeah.
I grew up in the Navy. And when I went in the Navy, I was just a 19-year-old illiterate kid. Mm-hmm. And by the time I got through the Navy, I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to be an English professor. And I got interested in literature in a rather strange way. I was a flight deck photographer on an aircraft carrier. And we would launch the planes. They'd fly them. This was the early 50s, mid-50s. they would fly the missions and come back. And if you work on the flight deck, there's a saying we used to have, that on a flight deck, you're either bored to death or scared to death. And mm-hmm. that's true.
I've heard that.
And I sat, as soon as we'd launch the planes, and I'd do all photography, I was just watching out for crashes. That's what I was doing. And as soon as all the planes were launched, there was nothing to do. And I would sit there in the catwalk with a camera, and I started to read. And I read more and more and more. And by the time I got out of the Navy 4 years later, I had a pretty good self-education in English and American literature. And I knew that that I needed to have some professional help in learning more about literature. So that's what took me to college. The only thing I wanted to do was be an English professor. I didn't want anything else.
What kind of literature drew you in? Do you remember, was there a specific type?
Oh, well, any title that I would recognize or that some officer would recommend to me, because I was uneducated at the time. And I read Hemingway and Steinbeck and O'Neill and Shakespeare during that time. I've often joked that I'm the only sailor who ever went into Hong Kong and bought a copy of Paradise Lost.
Okay.
But I will say I didn't understand any of it. I knew it was something about some ghost doing something, but I couldn't tell beyond that. And then I entered, got out of the Navy and entered college.
Which one, VCU?
I went to VCU for 1 year because my high school record was so sparse that I really couldn't have gotten into a good school at that point. Mm-hmm. But I went to RPI, did a good job quickly, transferred to William & Mary, ended up on the dean's list. And then after that, I worked one more year back at the time at the Richmond newspapers, and then went to the University of Iowa and took an MA and a PhD.
Wow, so you not only self-educated, but you're certifiably educated.
Well, that's right, yeah. I got keenly interested in literature and art and philosophy and music and everything else when I got out of the Navy. But the Navy did it to me. The main thing was, I guess, seeing those young officers about 3 years older than I, and they were in charge of everything, including me. And I thought, you know, I want to be like these people. I want to do something other than, well, actually, my first job on an aircraft carrier was cleaning toilets. And that stuck in my mind. I never wanted that kind of thing again.
That will stick in your mind.
It does indeed.
I remember that from basic training.
That's right. Well. That's right.
And you came back from the Navy. You went to VCU. You got your undergraduate degree from William & Mary.
That's right.
And went back to graduate school right away?
1 year.
A year later?
I worked a year at Richmond Newspapers as a photographer, and then went to graduate school.
Well, let's talk about 1958, when you first went to work for the Richmond Newspapers.
Sure.
There were still two
Oh, yes,
papers,
two distinct newspapers,
and
different staffs, too, two distinct staffs.
But the photographers worked for both.
That's right.
Did you ever have divided loyalties?
Or? No. The assignments would come down to us, and whatever photographer was available would take that assignment. And to me, all assignments were the same, I think to the other photographers, too. And what I sought to do was just get the best pictures that I could, and which paper it was didn't make any difference.
Well, you weren't still working with Speed Graphic.
No. The world of photojournalism switched to 35 millimeter as a result primarily of the Korean War, and we all went 35, and I was using Leicas and Canon cameras by then.
Were your photographs good at that point? Did you feel like you were mastering your trade?
I felt pretty good about it, but I wanted to do more than just be a staff photographer. I wanted to go to Life magazine or to National Geographic. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I was good enough to do that or not. I mean, I just don't know. I decided it might be as difficult to get a PhD as it would be to get into Geographic or a Life. And so that's when I changed and went to graduate school in English.
You've mentioned several times that you really wanted to teach English, and you knew this fairly early on.
Yeah, I did.
Why?
Literature is the soul of humanity, as far as I'm concerned. It's a vicarious kind of education. I thought that after reading especially some of the Renaissance dramatists and poets, and even the ancient Greek playwrights, I realized that all the vicissitudes of life was bound up in literature. And if you read enough of it, it would give you an education, a knowledge, I suppose, into the human soul. And that the big ideas, and that's what I was interested in. I didn't want to trade. I didn't want to get a degree in business and go in a bank or something like that. I wanted something where I was dealing with the heart of humanity, and I found it in literature.
Before we leave behind the Richmond newspaper's experience, when were the big stories that stand out in your mind, the big occasions where you were present with a camera?
Well, the biggest one, I guess, was the airplane crash right outside of, it was then Bird Field.
Yes.
I think it must have been 62 or something like that. I also recall that I worked with the, I think it was 7 original astronauts, photographing them.
The Mercury astronauts?
Yeah, the Mercury people.
They were here in Richmond?
Yeah, well, no, they were down in Tidewater. And I was sent down there and I shot there. I think they were probably the two major things. Of course, you always had the, you know, fires and auto crashes and stuff like that on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And I spent a day with Senator Byrd,
yeah.
In D.C. We did a big spread on him, and I got to go up and spend the day with him shooting candid pictures, mm-hmm. and that was interesting, too.
You eventually decided that this was a fascinating job, but your real job was still waiting for you.
I wanted something where I dealt with universal ideas, mm-hmm. and literature gave that to me. It still does.
What are you reading right now?
Right now, I'm not reading anything at all.
I thought you were going to have some wonderful suggestion for me.
No, I've read it all.
Oh, that's not possible.
I do occasionally pick up an anthology. I've got some here at home. And go back, and I'm particularly enamored of the English Renaissance poets, people like John Donne, Robert Herrick, and that group. Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful work they did.
Is it the words or the ideas?
The ideas through the words, I suppose I would say.
But the elegance of the writing, is that as important?
Oh, that's quite important, yeah. And style, you know, often read for style. Like somebody like Henry James, who's a consummate stylist. Mm-hmm. But you get to some of the other works, they're not that great as a stylist, but the ideas are there. And the technique is there, so I enjoy that.
You mentioned Hemingway. Hemingway is like short, terse.
That's right.
That is his style.
That's right.
But it's far from elegant or
it is indeed. It is indeed.
So you're interested in both words and ideas that they can express.
As I used to tell my students, Hemingway shoots from the hip.
I want to take a break and reintroduce our guest. Maurice Duke is a Central Virginia native, and he worked for the Richmond newspapers, the Times-Dispatch, and the Newsleader from 1958 to 1963, went to graduate school, and then fulfilled his ambition to become an English professor at Virginia Commonwealth University for 33 years. Do you care what people read, or do you just want them to read?
Just read.
So it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter to me, and I'm one of the few people that will read anything. Read for pleasure, read for knowledge, whatever. But I think just reading it itself is the most important thing.
I once read, alone in a hotel room on Piccadilly Circus in London, I read the instructions on how to use the British telephone because I had no books. I had left the books behind in Germany and gone for a long weekend, but that's how much I have to have something to read.
I
sounds
understand.
Like you're the same way.
Yeah, that's right. And I always had a book tucked in my back pocket when I was in the Navy.
Who's your favorite author?
Anybody from the Beowulf poet to the present.
The Beowulf poet was not speaking a brand of English we'd recognize.
Well, no, but I studied the Old English in graduate school. I had to. It was a requirement. And I was never a real good student of foreign languages. And essentially, Old English is it's like a foreign language. It's an inflected language, which is hard to learn. But I came away from that course. I read and translated all, was it 3,182 lines of Beowulf.
Is that how many there are?
That's it. You can see the impression it made.
You still remember?
And it's a masterful work. It really is. I do have, you said about favorite author, I do have two authors who were instrumental in, I think, in changing my view, perhaps my view of the world. One was Herman Melville's Moby Dick. And I have read all of Melville at one time or other, and taught Melville seminars, graduate seminars too. And the Melvillian vision, as I call it, is very interesting to me. One of the others was Dostoevsky. I read The Brothers Karamazov when I was in the Navy, and found some ideas there that were compatible with my thinking at the time. And I still think about the book and what it meant to me.
What was your favorite course to teach? Did you teach to the graduate level?
Yeah, I did.
These were people who had pretty much committed to English literature.
That's true.
Was there a period that you found more interesting to teach, or?
Well, my specialty was American literature, the 19th and early 20th century. And I enjoyed teaching the Melville seminar. I taught a seminar called Hawthorne, Melville, and Poe. Which was interesting, and I enjoyed teaching that.
What do they have in common?
19th century, I suppose.
So there's no thread connecting these
not really,
three.
No, they were quite different artists.
Poe is a Richmond native.
Oh, yes.
Said to have started the detective story.
That's right.
In this language. And you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's correct. Yeah, it was called The Tale of Ratiocination. Mm-hmm. Auguste Dupin, his chief detective, is the same identical type of approach to the subject matter that Arthur Conan Doyle picked up and used at a later time. And a great number of detective fiction writers have continued with that.
Yeah, opened up. People read them by the millions.
That's
nowadays.
Right. That's right. Yeah. I don't think that Poe was that good a poet, but I think he was a tremendous practitioner of the short story.
You don't think he was that good a poet? Mm-hmm. You got a lot of argument on that, or
most of the people in the Academy, I think, would probably agree with me. His critical theory and his critical his artistic vision is not profound, I think. Huh. You know, for Poe, the most beautiful poem would be centered on the death of a beautiful woman, who would still be alive. That's the most poetic thing for Poe. And I'd like to reach out a little bit beyond that.
Okay. So, 33 years.
Yes.
You never got tired of it.
Never did. By the end of my career, with the student body changing as it did, well, as you probably know, since the 60s, I found that, especially on the undergraduate level, that the students weren't as committed as they were earlier on.
Were they as well educated by the time they got to you?
No, they were not. No.
So you think the standards have slipped?
Yes, I did. I definitely did.
What's the solution? Do you have a handy solution?
Well, in many ways, we've lost control. We teachers have lost control of our classrooms. And a student will come to you these days, papers due, and you would say, I'm sorry, I didn't get a chance to do it. Mm-hmm. And that would never have been tolerated back when I first started in the Academy. Mm-hmm. I remember one student came to me, handed me a paper, it was way too short. Now, I'll skip what he really said, but you'll get it from the context. He said, Dr. Duke, he said, if I wrote any more, it would be bull blank. Mm-hmm. And I know you don't want to read any bull blank. And I said, no, that's exactly what I want, Fred. I said, 5 pages of bull black, no chicken black, and no horse black.
There's the distinction.
There's the distinction. And he just looked at me and his jaw dropped. But you wouldn't have had that when I first started to teach.
Did you mind leaving it behind when you
retired? No, I was ready to go.
And how are you enjoying retirement? How long have you been retired?
15 years.
15 years?
Yes, uh-huh.
And you're still filling your life with photography.
That's all that I'm doing, really. I'm not doing any more critical writing. Yeah. Mm.
I saw you in the hallway with a watch and a camera.
That's right, yeah.
What were you doing? And you were working, if I remember correctly, you were looking for the perfect light.
That's right.
For this.
That's right. It was a watch. This was part of that show that I was doing on the Civil War. And the one that's now out at the
Glen Allen,
yeah, it's on exhibit, it's on display out there. But that watch was, I don't know, I didn't do it, but somebody uncovered it during the course of the research that we were doing and found out that it belonged to someone and it had been through several different hands and so forth. And we were trying to make contact with the person whose family owned it, and we just wanted to send them a picture of it. This was not for a picture for an exhibit.
But you were spending a great deal of time and bringing to bear everything you knew in order to make this a good picture.
I still have that. I'm a perfectionist by nature and type 1 personality by nature. And if I shoot a picture, I want to make it the best that I can possibly make it. And that's the reason I was playing around with the light and shadows and so on.
Is that the secret to retirement, to have an interest?
Yes, something? Absolutely. I think, well, my father was not an educated man, and he retired. He was an iron worker, a construction worker, and he retired from work and sat in a chair in front of the television and smoked cigarettes for about 2 years and then died. And it was mm-hmm. and he was obviously miserable. It had nothing to do. He lost his more image of climbing the red iron, as they called it, and he felt lost, and he was gone.
Did you plan for your retirement?
Yes, I've been married 54 years, and Ann, my wife, was a professor also at VCU, and we were very careful about our money, so we wanted to go into retirement comfortably, and neither one of us are spenders. So that's where we have been able to amass enough money to be comfortable in retirement.
Mm-hmm. From your perspective, when you look at the way you grew up and the way things are today, and there's bound to be changes. I mean, life is constantly changing. What advice would you give to somebody who shared your interests but was just starting out today? I mean, the Navy is still a good idea.
Yeah.
Teaching English literature and being a newspaper photographer.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
What would you say to someone who had those interests today?
Work ethic. I'm an old-line conservative work ethic person.
Explain a little bit more about that.
I feel very strongly that if you want something, put your mind and your heart into it and work hard at it. And it'll pay off. Education also is quite important. I feel so sorry for these kids in lower economic situations and have somewhere along the way learned to hate education and the educated. And get an education and work at what you want to do. My father was opposed to it. He didn't trust educated men. From his point of view, a man ought to work hard at a manual job, and that was the mark of a real man. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have any other way of judging success except by hard manual labor. And he never understood what I was doing or why I was doing it. When I quit high school and went to work in a shop, he thought it was fine with him. Mm-hmm. And when I went to graduate school, I had a good job at the newspaper as a photographer, and he didn't understand why in the world I would leave that job and go back to school at age, I don't know, 28 or so, something like that.
Did he live long enough to see your success as a professor?
Yes, but he didn't care.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's just sad.
It is. It is sad, yeah.
Maurice, thank you for taking time to sit and talk with me.
Well, I enjoyed it and happy to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Okay.
My guest this time on What's Your Story has been Maurice Duke. Worked for newspapers from 1958 to 1963, went to graduate school, and then became an English professor for 33 years at Virginia Commonwealth University. I'm Don Dale, and I hope you'll join us next time on the Virginia Voice for What's Your Story?
You've been listening to What's Your Story with Don Dale. If you know somebody with a story to tell, or if you'd like to tell your own story, telephone the Virginia Voice, 804-266-2477, and be sure to join us next time for What's Your Story? This is Charles Mink speaking, and this is the Virginia Voice.